technology used to capture an escaped killer. We've got Google cutting a third of its recruiting team. A politician and her husband showing it all on a public site, then claiming invasion of privacy. And what else is going on? Drew Barrymore is restarting her talk show in spite of the writer's strike. A lot to get to. So what do you say we start the show?
It's the Stream Leader Report live panel. Creators talking to creators. Raw, real, and unscripted. And sometimes they say the quiet part out loud. Here are your hosts, Claudia Santiago, Rebecca Gunter, Rob Greenlee, and Ross Brand.
All right, welcome to the Stream Leader Report. I'm Ross Brand. It is our live panel show. My show is the Stream Leader Report. Joining me, Rebecca Gunter from Business in the Raw, Rob Greenlee from The Trust Factor, and Claudia Santiago from Viva La Stage. And since we got so many topics, let's just get right into it. Drew Barrymore is going to relaunch her talk show in spite of the writer's strike. What do you guys think? Are you pro management? Are you pro union? Do you not care? You know, what do you make of Drew Barrymore? And I think Bill Maher as well is
talking about launching
his show.
Bill Maher say it too, right? I think it's just been too long. They needed to come to some sort of resolution, and all these people are used to making a lot of money and they're not making anything right now unless they're on some sort of stipend from the union or something. But it's challenging for everybody, I think, right now, especially when you live in LA.
Well, I think the union people aren't going to be part of this unless they cross the picket line, and that would basically be death to their careers. So fortunately, all of us are used to operating and doing shows without our writers, but at a certain level, I guess you just can't do it, or maybe you can do it, but you don't want to do it. But I don't know if you guys know why, say, Drew Barrymore made the decision or Bill Maher's making the decision, besides a lot of time has passed and it's inconvenient, which is kind of the idea of a strike or sacrificing, right, is that it could be inconvenient. But
Well, I think that there's pressures on the creators. They're under contract with their networks. Bill Maher is a good example of that. And they can push it for so long before they start maybe getting challenged around their contract obligations as well. So that's like management against talent, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and they may be trying to figure out a way to get around this issue. I mean, I agree the optics don't look good for the people that are out on strike, but it's the pressures of going too long with this.
I guess I don't know the intricacies of the negotiations, so I'm not on either side. I don't have a viewpoint into what their issues are. I know that with streaming now, it's changed a lot in terms of where the money and how the money's distributed, and perhaps everybody wants a bigger piece of that, and that's something of concern. Yeah. What I can say is that if this were happening in another industry, I would think some of the talent that is quick to say, I got to get back and whatever, would reflexively side with the union regardless of what the issue is without investigating it too closely. But when they're the talent and it affects their ability to earn as people who are more than well off, it's interesting how they shift their views on things. I see a little of that going on.
I will contribute that I read that Kelly Clarkson is paying her crew out of her own pocket to keep the momentum going. So I just to kind of consider that there's, it isn't just like, well, we're either on a right. sinking ship or we're going to get off of it, that there are people out there who are trying to create a quality work environment and not violate, you know, kind of like ethically their alignment with the strike. It's, there's a way to do it for sure. Drew is contending that she's really a news show and should be exempt from the writer strike, which that's the part I'm kind of like, are you
okay, so aren't news writers also writers? Aren't they in the writers? If they're not covered by the Writers Guild, they're covered by another union. Now maybe that union, like,
you has know, not started striking yet, yeah.
AFTRA or NABIT or something like that, but maybe they're, that those unions aren't on. I really don't know enough about it, but I mean, it depends what union. She can claim her show is whatever she wants to claim it. It's what union the people strike, like, are any of the striking people impacted by the strike, by part of her show, or if they're not part of her show and the strike has no impact, then maybe it's a little different story, but she can define it however she wants to. But
she's not, yeah, she is in her show is supported by the Writers Guild. So this is definitely a departure. She's not the morning, you know, she's not CBS This Morning. That is a different union who may be striking anytime. Yeah. You know, who knows? The auto workers are going to strike. I think it's the year of the worker, the decade, not the year or the decade, but right now I'm like for the workers, like, making a stand.
It's a pretty ballsy move, honestly, all around, because you've got the union, but you've got the risk of other employers down the road that are like, no, she fought against us and we're not going to hire her. And then you got the peers. The peers are going, okay, well, we're doing it. What the heck are you doing? Like, we could be making money. Now, it's a pretty ballsy move, but it's kind of, to me, I'm like, exactly what you're saying here, Rebecca, is a year of the worker. I say it's a year of the entrepreneur, because why not start something different? Why not start new revenue streams that doesn't include the bureaucracy? So I'm pretty excited. Actually, whenever I see a whole strike thing going on, I'm like, woo, time to invent, people. So I don't know.
It's another pressure point on the mainstream media, right? That they can't seem to get their act together or grow audience. And they're, plus I also heard when this strike started that there was a lot of rumors that one of the reasons was because of the threat of AI technology.
Right. That's right.
That's a whole other thing there. Yeah.
Yeah. And what we think of, you know, the union as sort of the worker, these can be very well paid jobs. These are, you know, news writers at the network level and the big local network owned stations. I think they do very well, in terms of what they earn. The question comes with these entertainment shows. If they get a piece of syndication or whatever, what do they get for streaming? Are they getting written out of any sort of streaming residuals or streaming pay because it's a new field and their contract doesn't cover that? So I would assume, not knowing, but I would assume that that would be an issue of concern for anyone working who isn't the, you know, the top line people, you know, the people who have ownership or, you know, name on the show and so forth.
Exactly.
What do I get when the rights go to streaming? Do I get anything? And I think that's becoming more and more a part of where the money is being made. And the old contracts didn't consider streaming. So now, or didn't consider it, at least more recently, didn't consider it as such a big piece of what generates revenue for a show.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah.
Who's getting the money? Follow the money, baby.
All right. So Google, everybody, is cutting 1/3 of its recruiting staff. I believe Google, to sound very human-centered, used to call their HR department people operations or people or something like that. You know, anyway, clearly people aren't such a priority, because if you're cutting a third of your recruiting staff, then that means there's a lot of jobs, not just in the recruiting department, but across the organization that you're either not going to be looking to fill, you're not certainly not looking to grow. And so what would be a reason that a company like Google would at this time be cutting a third of its recruiters?
Probably because of AI technology as well.
Exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly where they're reinvesting it, for sure. I don't know that that's necessarily like a harbinger of terrible news. You know, jobs are kind of become outdated all of the time. I don't work as a clerk at Blockbuster Video anymore for good reason. However, in this greater not that I ever did, I was always a waitress, but in the greater context of this whole conversation about, you know, essentially shrinking worker, you know, sovereignty and increasing corporate profitability.
I kind of think that Elon Musk really kind of started this, this trend line that we're seeing, but it's also economic pressures. Plus there's also increasing amounts of automation coming to maybe Google's hiring practices too. Maybe increasingly they're using AI technology to screen candidates, and they just don't need that many people looking at resumes anymore. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that could be going on here.
Exactly. I mean, look at the stores that we go into now. Okay. Even banks, years ago, everybody walked in, there was friendly tellers everywhere. You walk in now and there's maybe one or two customer service, but everything else is automated, and same with stores. So yeah, we're definitely in a huge revolution of tech and many things. And I think this is again, an opportunity where it's like, hey, what do we cook up as human beings and work with the flow of what's going on? Because ultimately, that's where we're heading.
I just don't want to have to, I just don't want to have to tip any AI generated clerks. That's all.
They have the have you seen the robot waitresses and waiters at restaurants?
I've heard about it, but I haven't.
Seen that yet.
Yeah,
I was just gonna. I do know that a friend of mine was recently prompted for a tip at an automated automated checkout at the airport.
Yeah, yeah.
So I also saw that McDonald's is prototyping a humanless restaurant. So they're
amazing.
They're trying to work with that, trying to create a restaurant that doesn't have any employees. It's all automation that actually makes all the food.
So if they're doing away with us, then where do we fit? And what's our value? Right?
Spend.
Right? I know what you should do. You should go to ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT what humans should do going forward.
Yeah. Should we?
Oh, my God. That's such a cool idea.
Can we do that? Live, Rob?
2 years behind. So you'll only know what happened, what the opinion would be from a really, really powerful computer in 2021.
Rob, can we do that live when we're on? Could you ask ChatGPT?
I could probably do that. Yeah. Let's see here if I can pull it up here really quick.
Ask that.
Claudia, you are such an entertainer, man. You're the only person on this panel who would have been like, let's perform it live.
So what's the exact query that you want me to ask it? What should humans do?
What happens as AI takes
over?
Yeah. Or what happens to humans as AI takes away a lot of jobs?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so curious now. I want to know. Curious mind.
And this is a masterclass in prompting as well, I think.
Yes, in prompt too.
AI takes.
Hey, you know what? It's easier than a guest on. We could just invite
jobs.
We could have ChatGPT as our guest.
I could ask Siri.
Because, oh my God.
Because let's contribute to the minimizing of people.
Exactly.
Right.
Picture the panel show next week and it's just like,
hey Siri.
Okay, I'm gonna pull it up on the screen here. So
okay,
you
here we go, it. Drum roll.
Okay, let me bring it up.
High fives.
There we go. Okay.
Okay, so you see
four.
The query at the bottom, it says, mm-hmm. What should humans do as AI takes over jobs? So here's spend the money. Query. As AI takes on increasing number of tasks, the displacement of certain jobs becomes inevitable. While this can lead to economic and social challenges, it can also offer opportunities for innovation, new forms of work, and societal growth. There are several steps that can be considered to ensure a smooth transition and adapt to the emerging reality. Number
what,
one,
what do our
lifelong,
new overlords say? Yeah.
Right. New lifelong learning. People should be encouraged to continue learning and updating their skills. Number two is promote entrepreneurship out there. As traditional jobs decline, opportunities for new businesses and business models and industries will emerge. Number three, emphasize soft skills. While technical skills are vital, soft skills like emotional intelligence, leadership, teamwork, and adaptability are equally crucial. And then number four, universal basic income, UBI. And as automation, so government money coming in the door. And then number five, rethink education. So we should rethink a traditional educational model into something that's more emphasized critical thinking, problem solving, creativity, and adaptability. Number six is mental and emotional well-being. There should be greater focus on psychological impact of job displacement. Number seven is government policies. Governments can implement policies that support workers in transitioning industries. Number eight is job sharing working hours with others. As
lifestyle freedom.
That's right. It says as productivity increases with AI, one potential solution is to reduce the amount of working hours. There you go. More vacation time. Number nine is value human-centric jobs. Jobs centered on human interactions like therapists, caregivers, teachers should be valued more. Okay. Number 10 is develop AI ethical standards.
AI Constitution. Go. Rob is right. Here.
There we go.
At the number 10 position. Yes. And then number 11, community building and volunteering. So that's our prediction of our future from our overlords.
Guess what? You lost your job, but you know what? You can volunteer.
Right. There are
guess
things
what?
That
you only
can do.
Work part-time, but you can go on vacation if only
right.
you can afford it.
Or you could be a travel influencer.
Well, sweet. Let's just say ChatGPT is very, very politically astute in the answer that was given here, because right. it sounds awfully like when all of our manufacturing jobs were going overseas from the late 80s yeah. to the mid 90s, and everybody was saying they'll be replaced, you know, it'll just make our economy more efficient. Those jobs will be replaced yeah. with, you know, knowledge economy and, you know, social economy type jobs and whatever. Right. And the reality is most of the people who lost those jobs didn't replace those jobs with something anywhere near as well paying. And mm-hmm. all these suggestions, I don't know. It's a scary thought about what's going to happen. Not everybody's an entrepreneur. Not everybody mm-hmm. is, right. you know, not everybody can be, there's only so many teachers and you can have, right? I mean, we have enough trouble paying for everything that we need now. Where in industries that don't raise a right. lot of revenue, are mm-hmm. we going to get the funds to pay and hire all these people who are being outsourced or replaced by AI.
Yeah, and also if you look at the number four slot, the universal basic income, our government is so far in debt, and I think it's over $30 trillion now. That I don't see how we can actually afford to pay universal basic income. I mean, unless we're just printing money like crazy, I just don't see that as a realistic solution. I think it's being proposed as a solution, but I'm not sure that it's practical. But at the bottom of every ChatGPT query, it has like a summary statement, right? And this particular summary statement says that the transition to AI-driven economy won't be without challenges. However, with foresight, planning, and collective effort from governments, business, and individuals, it is possible to ensure that this shift results in better outcomes for everyone.
That's the part I don't believe.
There you go.
We're doomed.
That's the part I don't exactly. Like, do you remember 2 weeks ago or maybe 3 weeks ago maybe? And this has really stuck with me since then, when Rob was introducing the first driverless car based on Tesla AI. And you made this compelling argument about how much cheaper the car would be because it's so much cheaper to manufacture. It's not actually a machine, doesn't have a motor, blah, blah, blah. And my like Gen X rage, like disillusionment was like, they're never going to pass that savings on to us. That's not going to be a thing. This is going to be another $70,000 car. And whether it costs them a dollar to produce it or not. Now, whether that's true or not true, we've all yet to see. But I don't believe that the savings gets passed along to us. Just like I don't believe that the governments, businesses, and community builders are going to all get together and figure out how we can still be a thriving society. Well, I'm for the wage cap, not the wage minimum. And that's really where I'm raging today.
I can give you a personal testimony on that point with my own vehicle. I bought my Tesla Model 3 over a year ago now. And if you compare what I paid for that Model 3 to the Model 3 you can buy now, the same capability, the same features and everything, it's probably 25 to 30% less expensive. Elon Musk has been driving the cost down on these vehicles, and he has been reducing his prices, and that's actually causing the other automakers just all sorts of problems because they're already massively unprofitable with every electric car they make. And Elon's, putting the pressure on by dropping the prices of these cars and continuing to do so. He's talking about potentially in the next 3 years having a fully electric vehicle that you can buy that's in the $15,000 to $18,000 range.
I'm glad I brought it up since you can infuse some optimism into my jaded worldview. Yeah.
The other question is our government going to want us driving around cars? There's a lot of speculation out there that our abilities to move around are going to be limited because a lot of people are using too much gasoline,
right?
So we're burning too much fossil fuels for the climate change that's happening, and people will, I don't know if I'm going to be able to drive around more than somebody driving a gas vehicle because I'm driving an electric vehicle. Somehow that's, more green, right?
Where does the fuel that powers the electric grid come from?
Well, that's the bigger question.
Attached to the grid.
Well, that's the bigger question. We haven't made this full transition to renewable energy, so we are still very dependent on fossil fuels for our economy and transportation and all this stuff, and that's not going to change anytime too soon. Though I think more people are going to want to buy electric cars in the future, but it's still, how many hundreds of millions of, fossil fuel powered cars are out there and will be out there for, 10 years or more.
And how do we dispose of those parts and
crush them, baby? Crush them.
It's not it's not a panacea for the environment.
There's a lot of
issues with electric cars, just like there are with gas cars.
Sure.
And, getting the parts for them and how
in the minerals.
And how people are treated, I think, and mining for
correct
those parts and all that. I mean, there's a lot involved in
yeah, I think it's fair. It's actual fair criticism of the what's happening with electric cars. It's not that much better than burning fossil fuels, but you know, I think the thing to think about is we are making a transition to something new. The question is that will we be able to transition the electricity generation part to be more efficient or cleaner or that kind of thing? I think that's still yet to be, you know, fully deployed or even realized. Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Ross. I think we forget that, you know, we hear electric car and we think, oh, well, it's a wrap.
Sounds great.
I remember when EFTs came out and there was all this criticism about how much they actually require servers and like, I'd never even thought of that. I was like, oh, it's a digital file that we have really kind of put this dichotomy with like gas versus electric, something that's printed versus something that's electronic. And it's not necessarily that one is, you know, an angel and one is a devil. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah,
it's the same thing with the internet. It's like the idea that everything's out there for everyone and whatever. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the government, most businesses are using the same few companies to store all their stuff on the server. It's nothing for somebody to, wipe history of some event or some person clean pretty quickly. All you got to do is go to Amazon and, right? I mean, if everybody's using the same servers, it's actually a pretty centralized process, even though it seems so decentralized with a million websites and you know, five billion different people with their own data everywhere and whatever. It's actually not as decentralized as we think it is, which is why, and I haven't really gotten into it, but people talk about blockchain and things like that. And again, even there, somebody kind of holds the key to things, right? I mean, is it completely impenetrable, your data, or I don't know.
I mean, it's basically like driving a rolling iPad. I mean, that's basically what a Tesla is. I mean, got a touchscreen, it does everything. And I think that maybe two versions of cars coming up from Tesla will not even have a steering wheel or pedals. So, I mean, they're already talking about it, you know, because the whole full self-driving will be able to do everything. So why do you need a steering wheel? So, right.
I got to say, it's super cool. Rob and I were at the same event in Philadelphia area, Icon 8 independent.
Yeah, you got to ride in my car. Right.
And I got to take a ride in it. And it really is. It's this giant iPad. I mean, Rob's he still has to drive, but it does have some self-driving, right? Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't pick the.
It's capable of it, but it's just, I haven't paid the big expense having that ability, right?
But it's a really cool car, and it's a really neat experience. And it's fast. It would be nice.
It is amazing
when you get away from all that exhaust on busy streets and things like that. And of course, cars are getting better at that as we go along, even gas fuel cars. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it is nice. It's quiet. It's, you know, there's a lot of pluses to it.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
It is very cool.
We have a graphic that was set up here as a screen share. Does anybody know what that one is?
That's the Google Sheds Hundreds of Jobs article. But now I'm timed out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So maybe if you have a New York Times subscription, go grab the link and share the thing. But that's what it was. I was like, oh, dang. Fail.
Hilarious.
We're informal here. Just tell me, Ross, put the graphic up.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to ride this out. That's what I'm looking forward to seeing, and how a younger generation is even preparing. Like, when you think about this, okay, if AI and automation, everything's taking over and us humans are being tossed aside. Well, what about our younger generation that's going to school? Go to school for what? And what do we study? What do we encourage them to study and learn and go to school for? Like, what? You know, if once upon a time getting a degree in engineering to do X, Y, Z. Well, AI robots are doing that. So where, how do we walk this out as today us, but how do we help come alongside that younger generation to give them hope? Because honestly, I look at this and I go, geez, like, where are they going to fit in?
Yeah, they give me hope. We have to fit in. Sorry, Rob.
That's okay. No, I mean, I think it is a concern. It's also, you know, the more I dig into it, and as we saw on that output from even ChatGPT, it's, you know, soft skills and maybe the skills that we need to have going forward, we don't even know what those are yet. I'm not sure it's entirely clear, but I have increasingly been hearing the soft skills, like people skills and creativity and you know, some innovation and things like that, are really where humans stand out. And that may be a while before AI has those kind of cognitive capabilities. So it's just, that's our window of opportunity, I guess. Really.
And generations across the globe are saying to their own parents, aha, I can be a musician and make it, right, Claudia?
So being a content creator. So being an authentic content creator may be a good path forward too. I think we are going to see more AI content creations, but I think it's unclear whether or not humans are going to view those as trustworthy and authentic. You know, us four, what we're doing here may be one of the paths forward into the future. So
I think
from your lips to God's ears.
Yes, I think it's Stream Leader Report Counseling.
Right.
There you go.
And subscribe to this every week, and you'll get all that reinforcement that you need for your future success in the AI world. It's going to be right here.
What a differentiator.
Yeah, I mean, I think like people might be okay listening to a bot or something deliver the news headlines, but I think there's always going to be an appetite to see and hear what real people think about it and how it's impacting their lives and what their analysis, rather than, you know, what does the machine think of AI taking over from humans or whatever the issue is.
Never before has live streaming been so important, Ross.
Yeah, yes. I hope. I mean, as it gets better, they who knows? But I think, yeah, that human element. Let's take a look at this. Is an interesting story. Virginia election candidate responds after leak of tapes showing her performing sex acts with her husband, and very bold, saying it won't silence me. It's an interesting story in that, from what I understand, they didn't do this like a long time before she ran for office. And her husband were on some site in which, like, lots of people publicly share themselves, you know, having sex or being naked or whatever, and solicit donations and so forth, which they were doing.
Are these campaign donations?
I don't know.
So is this an example of the future of soft skills or hard skills?
That's the funniest thing you've ever said.
Oh, Rob.
That is so funny. Come up with that joke, ChatGPT.
That's right, yeah.
She claimed that it was an illegal invasion of my privacy designed to humiliate me and my family when somebody shared the video with the AP, which then, you know, ended up with it in the press. And her lawyer says disseminating the video is a violation of Virginia's revenge porn law, which makes it a crime to maliciously disseminate or sell nude or sexual images of another person with the intent to coerce, harass, or intimidate. Of course, the idea behind those laws was you filming a partner without their consent and then using it, not somebody going and putting themselves on a public website and then claiming that somebody else reporting they're being on a public website
for real.
With their consenting partner was unfairly acting, you know, against the law or whatever. I guess my question is, what does this mean for politics? Like, is it a relevant issue that an opposing candidate should raise, should not raise? Would it stop you from voting for somebody if you found this out about them? What, you know, are there any hard and fast rules? As we're playing with it.
Are we inspired now to create AI generated smear campaigns so that we can fake this for the next one?
Like, eventually you'll be able to take an avatar, a person, make it look so human, and then you have them doing who knows what.
Exactly. Look at our opposition, those heathens.
Now, did AI distribute it, or was it somebody physically? Like,
no,
they
went on a website.
It's like OnlyFans?
Yeah, it wasn't OnlyFans, but it was some other website that's similar.
That's public.
Except it's one that's got, like, you know, all these windows of people. According to the story, and like
cam girls,
you pick the one or whatever, and people would watch, and they'd be like encouraging people to give them tips, and then it said they even offered to do private shows or something for paying audiences.
Like, I'm sorry, maybe call me old school, but you know, like, you're a public figure, you're running. You know, a campaign. You're trying to gain people's trust, and you're doing this BS. Like really? And then public, you don't think it's gonna get out there? Like really? I just go, what were you on? Like, you want it, right?
Maybe we're decolonizing our Puritanism.
Or is it a sign that really anything goes now, and people are free to just be who they are, and if this is who they are, then
why is she like all upset about it? That's the thing I'm getting at. It's like,
I think that
because people found out about it, right? And they didn't want
I think the real question is, right? What did you expect? Whether or not you agree with her or not, I'm not gonna yuck anybody's yum. Like, be a camp girl, get tips. I'm fine with that. It's honestly, unless you're not hurting anybody. But the expectation that no one's going to discover that as you run for public office is ludicrous.
Yeah, and like, use discretion. Like, for goodness sakes, like, really? There's certain things, you know, that we just don't do.
Right, you would think so, but I'm not sure that there is much that we don't do anymore, right?
Right. Yeah.
I agree with that.
Well, at least there was a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit. And
they
did ask for money, and they did offer special,
that's what I thought too, right?
Benefits, like, if you paid more and so forth.
Yeah,
so,
there you go.
You know, we have to have a budget in the state house.
Sex work is real work. Sex work is real work.
Paying their mortgage while they're running campaign.
Hey, that's an interesting point, Claudia. Actually, I got into it. if that not saying that that's funded their campaign, but let's just say it did. And you could then divest yourself from PAC money and like corporate donation. We could kind of divest our political system from nefarious, and we were all raising our campaign funds from doing an OnlyFans page. Now I'm seeing a societal evolution.
I'm not beholden to any special interests except for the people who like to watch me naked.
Exactly. Kink only. Hashtag kink lives.
It's a special, what do you call it? It's a new special interest group that's going to have disproportionate power in the state house.
It's a new definition for a political pack, right? It's
what'd you say, Rob? It's a nude definition.
New type of political pack, right?
Political pack. Right. I wonder if they needed writers for that script.
Oh my God! I see a new job for me since AI is taking over my job.
That's it. The nude thing's fine, but going with writing their own script and going against the strike.
Scabs, I tell you.
That's a step too far.
Yeah,
too much performance pressure, I think, is what's going on here.
But
unbelievable. When you suggested that, I was like, no, this can't be real. Like, click this.
Right.
Ross, you're constantly surprising me and reinventing this panel show.
All right. So with that, who wants to introduce our main story today, our cover story, which is the capture of an escaped convict, a very dangerous person, using a combination of technology, human intelligence, and canine courage to apprehend Danilo, I forget the last name off the top of my head.
Uh-huh. Claudia, my boyfriend's obsessed with this case. He's been talking about it for 10 days. And when you put this in as your topic, he was like, yes! Like, he's obsessed with this topic. So please.
Well,
wasn't this going on down in Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Philadelphia. So yeah, so you guys know I follow the crime mama. People call her the crime mama. She's a ex-FBI agent, Jennifer Coffin-Daffer. I follow her on Twitter. Nowhere else, just Twitter. Isn't that funny? But and it's really quite something because, you know, she brings her expertise, but she also, it really involves her audience. And, you know, and then they all chime in and, you know, it's kind of neat. So yeah, well, 15 days ago now, because they caught him on the 14th day, she did post that on there. And I didn't know who he was, but there was videos of him escaping, and he looked like Spider-Man. Like,
he did a crab walk up the wall and then
crab walk up the wall. I mean, you need some serious core muscles to do that. And but what I found out later was that he actually, you know, in Brazil, because he's from Brazil, he since he was 7 years old, he was working out in the farms and the woods. And I mean, mm-hmm. Guy is like Monkey Man. Like, he just knows his way around and survival. So the fact that he could dodge, and even Jennifer was like, what the heck? You know, there's so many out there looking for him. The way he could dodge everybody was just unreal. Like all the police force. So they ended up, I believe, just to recap here. Yeah, there he is. They ended up collaborating also with Border Patrol. And it was a Border Patrol squad along with a dog whose name is Yoda, a canine officer who managed to actually take him down because they use the cameras to heat detect. And then what they did is they zeroed in on him. They didn't go after him right away. They zeroed in. They were all around him. And then when he woke up, he was under some pile of rubble or something. And then he woke up and he still tried to escape. He had a rifle in his hand and everything, but it was the dog that chased him down and that subdued him. In fact, he bit his head, I believe it was. Not huge bite, but just a minor. But yeah, it was the dog that took him down. So it was a very interesting thing for me because since you, all of us here are talking tech and AI and all this and that, and Rob's constantly bringing up all the tech gadgets. Yeah. So I don't know, Rob, you have some insight too on this drone, this, what was it called again? The FLIR?
FLIR.
FLIR. The FLIR.
It's infrared, right?
Yeah. It's used in what? Police type of activities, right?
It's a camera they attach, I think, to the drone.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, drone technology is definitely escalating, but yet at the same time, it's being increasingly regulated. So there was a new FAA law that was just about to be implemented, though it looks like it's been delayed now. I think it's been delayed because they're struggling to get it actually deployed fully and people being able to support it. There's a lot of drones out there that I should probably back up and say what this is. It's basically, it's a new FAA law called Remote ID. And what it does is it applies to drones that are in flight, have to transmit a transponder of sorts to the FAA to basically tell the FAA where they're located at while they're in flight, so they can be monitored. So there's already a lot of FAA laws around certain types of drones, certain size of drones, certain capabilities of drones, height, flight limitations. I've got a drone myself, and the software in the platform limits the height that I can fly it, and also limits where I can fly it based on the proximity to airports and other kind of like public installations or government installations. And then also it's limited to only 400 feet in height. So I can only go up 400 feet in the air, and the software will actually warn me on the screen that I can't go any higher.
Interesting.
So there's all sorts of limitations. The actual drone that I have doesn't have to be registered with the FAA, but if it weighed 1 gram more than it does, it would have to be registered with the FAA. And then they also have a pilot's license that you should get to actually fly one of these things. And it's like getting a airplane pilot's license of sorts. It has the same kind of tests and stuff like that. So you have to understand all the jargon of the FAA and, all of the weather designations that they have for different weather situations and things like that, that is kind of complicated. There's entire schools, online schools that drone pilots regularly go to and train. Actually, I signed up for one myself to train myself on proper flight of a drone. And there's all sorts of rules and things like that that exist around how you can fly these things. But there's also this other pressure, like what we're talking about here, where drones are increasingly having all sorts of usefulness. There's a lot of talk about Amazon doing package deliveries with drones at some point. And I don't know if that's actually ever going to be deployed or not. Because I think there is some danger to people on the ground, that type of scenario. So I think they face some resistance to that kind of stuff, for a lot of different reasons, but it's interesting, to follow this. And I think we're more than likely going to see a lot more drones, but they're probably going to be more government drones would be my speculation in the future.
Exactly. You think that they're going to continue limiting how much the average person can use a drone to the point that it becomes exceedingly restrictive to
you? Yeah, well, I think that they're pretty much there already. I've heard people in the drone industry per se, those that are, very vocal and very active, have been for many years, complaining and saying they're basically just about done, because they have limited your abilities to do things so much that a lot of these folks have gotten used to doing a lot of different things with their drones that they just can't do anymore. So it's kind of eliminating the whole purpose of having a drone. And that may be what the bigger goal is that they want to regulate this to a point where only professionals are doing this. And it may be more the control of the government and corporations that actually have these, because those can be regulated.
Yeah. In this particular case, what I found interesting too, as I dug into it a little more, is it took the drone to, and today, I didn't see those before, but today I actually saw some footage that was kind of leaked that shows him running in the bush, and they could see him. And they closed in on him, they were following him, but they were being real strategic. So it took the drone. It took the manpower, because I think they have 500 guys or something out there looking for him. It took the manpower to scour, because the thing was, is he wasn't just an escapee. Like, he had a history of murder. He's a very dangerous man. He had gone into houses, into sheds, and gotten guns and things. Like, he stole a truck. Like, he had no filter as far as... right or wrong, he was just...
Don't forget about the snap peas, Claudia. He stole some snap peas.
There, that's right, the snap peas. So, you know, he was a very danger. They closed down schools. I mean, this cost that area a lot of money, resources, and, you know, just basic safety. And then what was interesting is when they used the dog. So we've been talking about technology, automation, and everything. I'm thinking, well, how cool is this? It took all three, and it took the public and social media as things got spread out to capture him. Now, by using the dog, this was the other thing. There was a order to kill upon arrested if he resisted. Okay. So by using the dog, though, by releasing the dog, they were able to subdue him and capture him. This is why they use dogs, so that they don't have to use lethal force. So despite everything this guy did, like when I look at this, here's the human part of it. They chose to use a dog so they didn't have to kill him. I don't know if AI could do that.
I don't know.
Eventually we'll send in the robots and they can take the shots and keep going.
But, you know, a dog is able to retreat on command. It is trained to only do so much, or it's trained to do more if given the command, right? So anyways, I just thought, like, on a human level, this was a really cool story that came to a good ending. And the fact that, you know, we're using technology, manpower, a dog, that's, anyways, I just found it kind of interesting. Yeah.
I gotta robot say, the dogs. Drones are really cool. Like,
yeah, when's Tesla coming out with a robot dog? Right. the dogless dog. I don't know.
Does Tesla Boston make
Dynamics
drones, do they?
Has them already. Yeah.
Now, I've seen some footage of some dog-like creatures for sure.
And they're starting to be sold to police forces around the country. So you're starting to see these police dogs.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
And especially the ones that have guns attached to the top of them. Those are always the ones that I'm looking forward to seeing on the streets. Interesting. Yeah.
There is a Black Mirror about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this particular dog's name is Yoda, and they retired him right after. So, yeah. He was 4 years old. So, yeah.
One good catch and you're retired.
Job well done. Yeah. A lot of
you're done, buddy. All right.
Yeah. I hope he practices his soft skills and learns how to be a better
soft
dog.
Skills. Right.
That's right.
Because that whole biting thing goes out the window once you're no longer.
Exactly. What is going to expand his personal network.
What is it Yoda says in the movie?
There's no try. There's only do. It's the only quote I know.
A Jedi you will be. Well, there you go. Yeah, anyways, it was interesting for me and how criminology is still using human force and human and animals. And which leads me into something else, just kind of a little off topic, but kind of on topic here with what we talked about earlier, was how, you know, we were talking another show. I think Rebecca was the one that brought it up about stuff going on the internet. Yeah, and there's this AI called the BERT. What was it? I think I put it in the group. Hang on a sec. That scours the dark web. So again, with criminology and cybersecurity, all that kind of stuff, it's called the BERT. Hold on a minute. I got it here. Oh yeah, there's other things like, and here's one for you, Rob. The Worm GPT. You heard of that one?
No, I haven't heard of that one.
Did you say Worm? Is that what you said? Worm
GPT, the fraud GPT, has appeared for sale on the dark web as of July 2022. So how is the dark web reacting to AI revolution? Okay, so dark BERT rises. So this is a whole other thing, but it scours not the normal internet, but the dark web. So these are all cybersecurity things, like Rebecca, we were talking about this a little bit with the other show. So anyways, that's like curious minds want to know, and we bring that topic up another time, but more, but it's a cybercrime fighting and what they're developing and these specific AI tools. But then of course there's people using similar tools to do wrong stuff, but then you got cybersecurity already on it. And, but yeah, that's the big one right now. Mark this one. It's called the Dark Bert.
Dark Bert.
And you guys may
friends
not
with
know
the dark Ernie.
Okay, I was gonna say it, Ross. Man, okay.
You got
okay.
There,
now,
Rebecca.
Now listen to this. I just about fell over when I heard this. Okay, so as I was reading, it was talking about Dark Bert and all this stuff. But what I didn't know is that Facebook has this thing called the Robert, with capital letters Bert. Facebook researchers designed back in 2019 to predict intentionally hidden sections of text within otherwise unannotated language examples. So Dark Bert is like Roberta's cousin. But if you think about that, Zuckerberg was on that since 2019 with Roberta.
Well, I just looked up Worm GPT. And it says right on the top for Black Hat, which is, you know, things that you shouldn't be doing on the
right.
web, for lack of a better definition. And, you know, the first example is like, how easy is it to hack or something like that? And I thought, you know, I don't know that I should be on this any longer.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So it's a big deal. It's a big thing, the cybersecurity and all the things, you know, that's something I think Rebecca brought up before, like how are they dealing with AI and all this? So yeah, so these intelligence is really developing that stuff. So when we think about the future and we think about, you know, the younger generation too, it's like, I think there's going to be a lot of new job opportunities, literally in cybersecurity, huge.
More cops, less people.
Uh-huh. We're all going to be on vacation, remember?
Right. Yeah. Right. To the salt mines is more like it.
Right? Or we learn how to program Roberta.
Roberta. Yes.
And why they would call it Bert, like the Bert, there's something about B-E-R-T in capital letters that means
must something. Be an acronym for something.
It's got to be.
Well, the AI that Google has is called Bard. That tells you anything. B-A-R-D.
Microsoft, right?
No, that's Google's AI.
Oh, Google's.
And it's called Bard. B-A-R-D.
Microsoft's got a ChatGPT something.
It's called AI. I think it's called Copilot AI is what they call it.
Wow. We covered a lot today.
BERT stands for Biodirectional Encoder Representations from Transformers.
That was my second guess.
Exactly, Ross. Holy moly.
Well, we are out of time. This has been a fun show. We covered a lot of ground, some controversial topics, some craziness, a lot of things going on with tech, some good, some concerning, but we will keep you posted on everything going on in the world of tech and social and online business each week, Thursdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, for Rob Greenlee, host of The Trust Factor, Claudia Santiago, Viva La Stage, and Rebecca Gunter, Business in the Raw. I'm Ross Brand from The Stream Leader Report and The Stream Leader Report Live panel. We'll see you again next week, Thursday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern.